You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
9 minutes after 10, we in conversation with the leader of the Democratic Alliance, Musi Maimane, for the next hour. You can tell us what questions to put to him. You can put those questions yourself. The lines will be open throughout this conversation. We haven't had Musi on the show, I don't think, certainly not for a sit-down, since I took over the show from radio, even when I filled in for her. And obviously, the opposition matters deeply to a healthy democracy. That's why, certainly as an analyst, I've often paid, some would say, more attention to the TA than any other party, and left the ANC, who gets, I think, way too much attention, and rightly so, because they're obviously in national government, from most of my peers as political analysts. But at the end of the day, what happens in the EFF, in the smaller parties, as well as in the DA, the official opposition, matters deeply to building a democratic society where you have competitive politics, which is the lifeblood of accountability. So we thought we'd have a shoot the breeze conversation with him, a wide range of issues about the state of the DA, and you can tell me what the most important questions are to put to him. Use the hashtag Musi on Eusebius or at 702 at Cape Talk. And also, if you are on Facebook, you can watch this live on our 702 Facebook page. Musi, thank you so much for making time for us.
Yeah, good morning. And it's really great to be here, and congratulations on the work you're doing on your show. And it's nice to be here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure having you on the show. And I must say, it's coincidence if you are watching me on Facebook. I realized as I left my house this morning, I'm wearing all blue. So that's why I had to take the cap to have a bit of black and white to break the blue in case I'm being accused here
it's all happening.
Of being in the same WhatsApp group as Musi. The question is, could I vote DA in 2019? But the first question I want to put to you this morning is, Bob fell yesterday.
Yeah.
When will Zuma fall?
2019. Look, I think what's happening in Zimbabwe is an important development for the region. And what I think is important to go on from henceforth is that Zimbabweans must prepare themselves to go to the polls, because I always believe the people are the best equipped to decide what their future is. And ultimately, we can set up a transitional government and ensure that not only Bob falls, but ZANU-PF, because ultimately it's been ZANU-PF who've protected Bob in some form or another. And it's not a question of which faction of ZANU-PF must take forward. It's a question of how do you enhance constitutionalism and the right for citizens to vote.
What I'm really getting at with the reference to what's happened in our neighboring country is that Bob fell as a result of factional differences inside ZANU-PF and then a bloodless coup, effectively a constitutional coup, which is normally a contradiction in terms, via the army. The opposition parties in Zimbabwe, Musi, were conspicuously absent in the last week in particular, in the final moments of Bob exiting. And that's why I'm asking about Zuma. Will Zuma ultimately, if he does go before 2019, fall because the ANC is its best opposition, or because you as the opposition actually have a cunning plan to capitalize better on the obvious weaknesses of the Zuma-led government?
Look, I think what's important to note is that if we ever create a belief that the only form of opposition must come from within, then we undermine the very democratic space. And I think if you look at this coup, or a bloodless coup that has taken place, we never must forget some key events. The 1980s, when they removed the opposition through ZAPU. The fact that in 2008, when actually Robert Mugabe had lost the elections, South Africa went there and said we needed a government of national unity, and then created an entrenchment of dictators. We have to ensure here in South Africa that constitutional democracy and the will of the people is upheld. And I think, actually, some of what gives me hope about our nation is that in 2016, South Africans rejected the ANC and voted for the opposition. And that's why we could be able to form coalition governments to take it forward. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the best way to do it, because if you ever allow what is seen as a sense of the opposition coming from the ANC, you end up with a space where really, as the Kenyans described, it becomes someone's turn to eat. It stops becoming about the service of the people. And I really believe South Africa is poised for an alternative. I think 2019 is going to be an exciting election. And I think we should, rather than looking at what happens within factions of the ANC, we should effectively be setting ourselves up to say, what are we going to do in 2019? Can we vote for an alternative? Can we bring change in the most democratic way? Because when you do that, you can ensure the sustainability of the project of democracy.
Can we talk a little bit about the current character And I know you're not an homogenous party, which you can't be as you grow. But the current character of the Democratic Alliance, I had a remarkable 5-10 minute conversation on the show several weeks ago with former DA leader Tony Leon. And sometimes there's a kind of reflectiveness and maturity. It doesn't always happen once people have left politics and they can reflect back on their own leadership. Yeah. And he said a couple of things that were interesting. The first was he took responsibility for how liberalism as an ideology often was a swear word in South African politics in the late 90s and the early noughties. And he said maybe that he was responsible for some of the tone deafness in the DA back then. But then I asked him also what he makes of the DA currently. And there were two things that came out of that conversation. The one was that the DA can't just be reacting to the ANC's faults. There must be a positive alternative that you're offering the country, either at the level of ideology and vision or specifically at the level of a particular policy that is a clear break from something that is the status quo. Mm. And in addition, you also said, coming back to liberalism, that you need a liberalism that is not anachronistic, that speaks to the particular history of this country. Mm. So I want us to really go into some detail on both of those points. Firstly, with liberalism, I often say, as you probably know, I mean, I think of myself as a liberal. There are many classic liberals in the DA. I don't know how you self-identify. I don't think you're a liberal. I think there are very few liberals in the DA. What do you understand by liberalism? Is the DA still liberal? Or if it was up to you, would you secretly, the people who are liberal in the DA, stop using that word because it doesn't have any purchase in South African politics anymore? What are your reflections on that?
Look, I think we must start the conversation from the global context of liberalism and then work our way downwards. Because I think within the global context, there is a significant conversation about, as liberal ideology, as espoused by the rights of individuals, the ability for people to own private property, the very sense of tolerance of difference, the ideals that allows people to give freedom of expression, the notion that in fact South Africans are diverse, or globally people are diverse. I think that whole ideology is maturing. I think it's certainly facing some profound challenges, as when you talk about it in an economic sense, you have to deal with the fact that how do you do the concept of redistributing economic opportunities to others? How do you deal with a sense of group? I think the Europeans are battling with the question about how do you deal with religious grouping? Well, it's Muslims or whatever. Mm. How do you deal with the question of migration? Mm. And then you bring it down to South Africa and Africa. Because I think Africa needs to define itself within that same concept and discussion. And what is starting to happen now is that I think those values have become even more paramount. And it becomes an ideal to which we can continue to pursue. When you talk about the fact that South Africans can collectively work together across a diverse group, that we reject intolerance and discrimination, those become important today. That there's a genuine maturity, and I think in the character and nature of the DA, that we've got to enter into a post-national liberation movement era, where in fact it's a replacement of one racial elite for another. That becomes an important character of the organization.
Do you self-identify? Are
Absolutely.
You a liberal?
Absolutely.
What does that mean for you in very simple terms?
For me, it continues to fight ultimately for the fact that we must stand for the rights of individuals, we must ensure that private property thrives, we must ensure that in that sense, that for me, there can be no discrimination on the basis of gender, sex, sexual orientation. That, in fact, even more importantly, this whole idea that the market, in fact, and it's not to the exclusion of the state, and I think sometimes people make that mistake, that is the best form that can allow for individuals to be able to thrive within their
economy. So if the individual is at the heart of liberalism, where does group identity come in? I mean, I can't tell you how much I have in front of me, and I've been sent thought pieces by DA members who are royally pissed off with what they perceive to be a philosophical change in the party's direction in relation to liberal individualism. And some of them former, I don't know if they still are, but it appears to be former friends of yours, the Gavin Davises and some members in the Gauteng, parts of the Gauteng of the DA, who are writing these pieces, some anonymously, and basically their beef is there's too much of an emphasis on things like group identity, on race, etc. Now, I feel sorry for you. It's the reason why I would never be a politician, because you've got too many constituencies. I get paid just to be me. You have to keep every constituency happy. And and you've got an impossible task. But tell me how group identity, like racial identities, square with a classic liberalism in terms of the history of the party that de-emphasizes group identity and race in particular.
Look, I think what started to happen with liberalism all over the world, I think you can even cite this in liberal democracy and argue the case that there's now a group of values, and in the DA we're united by those values, the idea of freedom, the idea of fairness, the idea of opportunity. When you then unpack the question about fairness, there must be an implicit acknowledgement that there's a deep inequality in South Africa. Now, that inequality is born out of race, thanks to our history. And globally, people are asking that question. How do we address this inequality in communities, in people's opportunities? And I think the uniting feature is the fact that we can come together as diverse South Africans, black, white, Indian, and colored, and contribute to the question as to how do we build a society that is fair? How do we say where South Africans who are left behind, with the majority of which are black, are in fact, what interventions do we put there? South Africans who are particularly black South Africans are not poor because they are black. They are poor because there was a system that miseducated them, that put them in the outskirts of economic opportunity. And therefore, the job of the DA today, acknowledging...
I just want to rewind there. I sometimes wish I had a rewind button on the wireless for talk radio.
No, I think
did you say they're not poor? They weren't... Poor black people were subjugated because they are black.
Absolutely. We don't deny that.
So their poverty,
it's not the color
their poverty
of your skin.
Is inextricably linked with their racialized identities.
No. The color.
No?
No. Let me just be clear here. Apartheid subjugated black South Africans. Not denying that fact.
On the basis of what?
On race. There's no question about that. Because they are black.
Mm-hmm.
And it put them on the outskirts. But you can't globally argue the point to say that otherwise you must then say, if people remain black, they'll never be espoused to get out of that. So it's not the melanin that makes you poor. It's a system that oppressed people of a particular race that did that. And therefore, that is the point I'm trying to make, that we must undo the system that put black South Africans out of economic opportunity. And that is not a call only for a particular race. It's a call for all South Africans to acknowledge that. It must offend a white South African, just as much as it offends an Indian South African or a colored South African, that in fact, it is wrong that we have a race of South Africans who are left behind. And I think that unifying value of fairness is applicable to all the people who I believe subscribe to the ideals of the DA.
Okay, 21 minutes after 10, if you want to put a question to Musa, give us a call right now on 021-446-0567 in Cape Town and in Johannesburg on 011-883-0702. There's lots more I want to talk to him about, not just about identity politics. There's questions of how to grow the economy, for example, that matter profoundly to you and to me. I think, and I know this is a bit glib, you know that I care deeply about eliminating racism and white supremacy, but I really think if the economy was in better shape, we'd have a better shot at having black people not with inferior complexes and white people not with superior complexes. So I also want to get a sense of how the DA would go about problem solving the economic crisis, because clearly the ANC presidential candidates are all out of ideas. 25 minutes after 10. Okay, let's give you a chance to engage the leader of the official opposition, Musi Maimane, and then I'll get back to some of the themes that I still want to explore with him on the other side of the news headlines break. Tandi, good morning. Musi, can you just put your headphones on for me? 1 second, Tandi. Just want to make sure that Musi is hearing you. Good morning, Tandi. Go ahead. What is your question?
Two very quick ones. The first is, I'd like to know what Musi thinks about the upcoming motion of no confidence in Herman Mashaba and Athol Trollope. And does he think that the ANC is trying to regain power with these motions of no confidence? And the second question is, I'm really worried about possible junk status this Friday. How does the DA plan to set the economy straight again?
Okay, thank you. The honourable member of the DA asking two wonderful softball questions to her leader. Go ahead, sir. Obviously, the ANC wants to get back into power. I mean, we can put that one aside. The junk status one probably goes to the heart of what really matters to South Africans. Jobs, 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 and growth.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the very foundational issues that we've got to focus on is how we grow this economy. And I think the most crucial starting point must be, how do we restore institutional capacity? Part of the risk that rating agencies have come back, have said that the political leadership is at risk in this country, so we need to stabilize that. The second issue is, I think we need to find ways of fighting for new entrants, whether those are micro-enterprise, whether that's new entrants in big key sectors such as mining, financial services, so that ultimately we can introduce more competition, but ultimately new places for people to find work. And I think thirdly, South Africa must take a view that says, how do we see city-led economic growth? This is a function of how we build infrastructure in our country. And it speaks to the very heart of why we are in government, because the building of infrastructure, when you reflect on the period before 2010, we built infrastructure and our economy started to grow, because you can't just lead your economy on consumption. And then ultimately, how do we create a supply side to that economy that deals with the skill base of young people? So this is about ensuring that I have certainly been on record to propose that young people must be given a year upon which they can do internship programs, they can learn skills, and we allow them to pay them throughout that year, but it gives them a skill and a contribution towards the economy. And even around the use of state-owned enterprises, I think they position for us a biggest risk. I mean, the caller correctly points to the fact that junk status is a risk, because if entities like Eskom, etc., default, they pose it a massive risk for us. And I think we should think long-term about this. I am certainly one advancing the fact that some of these assets must be sold off so that equity can be given to the private sector.
Which ones?
I would argue the case that even, I don't think South Africa needs to own an airline. I really don't. I think that we could be able to sell off that asset. At this point in time, it will be tough, but we're signaling intent that over a long period of time, we must invest equity into that. I think we must even think about how we set up Eskom to have this big monolithic group that can, in fact, put the whole country at such high risk. Means that I think we can split it into two companies. We can allow distribution and we can allow infrastructure build. And I think cities who are capable can be able to build infrastructure, because they can diversify energy. They can not depend simply on coal, but they can go into sustainable energy, energy build, whether it's on wind or other technology. And then we focus on distribution and ensuring that there are more players. And that's what initial legislation around ISMO sought to do, and introduce more independent power producers. PRASA, as an example, why do we need...
But I'm a bit confused, because I'm listening to you and I'm trying to understand the specificity and the particularity of how you do grow the economy. We've just had a downward revisement for this year to 0.7%. If we continue in this path, by 2019, the biggest chunk of our budget will go to servicing debt.
Yeah.
And even social security spends will be second to that. So the welfare state itself is under threat, which is probably one of the biggest threats to our democratic gains since 1994, Musi. On the one hand, you're telling me that, in a sense, you're not using this wording, but the state is a bit bloated, and maybe sometimes we play in too many sectors as the state, and sell off some assets. So that is classic liberalism, not in a bad sense, in the sense that you want a lean and mean state machine. But in the same breath, you're telling me that one of the ways to unlock jobs is, for example, to make sure that we keep our fiscal spend on infra, because with it obviously also comes opportunities for smaller players into various sectors of construction, et cetera, et cetera. You can't have it both ways.
No, you can. Let me just, and I'm not saying that it's a question of having it both ways. When I said independent power producers will bring profound private sector investment into the energy sector. And if you break it down and give cities the opportunity to be able to administer that, I bet you now there are many South Africans out there who say, I want to build wind power plants. I want to build so that we can introduce a diversity of energy that can come on board. When I argue the case even about Transnet and saying that why can't cities, for example, if Nelson Mandela Bay was able to run its own port, could it not be an opportunity for us to be effective at managing that so that it's efficient, so that it can attract investment? So I'm certainly asking for citizens, particularly in the private sector, that we abandon this private sector strike, that we make South Africa an attractive place for both foreign and domestic investment, and then deal with the question of how we stimulate micro-enterprise. Because the longer I travel around this country, I see young people who are trying to start their own businesses. What they desperately need is opportunities, and those opportunities aren't going to come from big state contracts. They're going to come from small cities who can remove all regulations, allow them to compete so that citizens are empowered to grow. And I think the more we can do that through a micro enterprise, the more we can attract more work opportunities for young people and for South Africans in general.
Okay, are you convinced by that high level description of an economic plan, or do you think that it is thin? engage Musi on economics. If you want to do so, give us a call in Cape Town, 021-446-0567, and Johannesburg is on 011-883-0702. Or tell me your thoughts on what he has just said about the economy by using the hashtag Musi on Eusebius, and I'll read that out just to take your sentiment in relation to Musi talking economics.
Eusebius is on Twitter at Eusebius.
Hashtag Musi on Eusebius. That's where you can tell us what some of your thoughts are. Musi, let's take another caller before we move the conversation forward. Selebogo, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Go ahead. What's your question?
Good, good. I just wanted to find out from Musi. The DA continues to speak about the new beginning for all South Africans, and I want him to explain what does that mean to the average South African. Basically, what will this new beginning look like in light of the crisis of the ANC government, and what will the DA basically do that is different? I'm a black man, so I need to understand what's going to happen, what's going to be different.
Thank you so much.
And then I've got the second question that
we'll just keep it to one, Selebogo, because we've got lots of people who want to speak to Musi. The first one is a nice question, semi-open one for you. Take the gap.
Look, one of the things that we are saying to South Africa is that there's a system that oppresses too many South Africans, whether that be through corruption or lack of opportunity. Mm. We need to bring a new beginning. That new beginning says, firstly, how do we empower citizens so that they can maximize on their opportunities? It says, furthermore, how do we build a diverse society that includes more people into the economy, particularly those who are left behind? And it speaks to the very core of some of the things that I've put forward, but it also articulates the idea that when we look at key sectors, who are the new entrants that we need to fight for to come in? So that more South Africans, particularly black South Africans, can enter into the economy. So if you take even a subject like mining, it certainly can't be in South Africa that we've got such few mining companies. We must champion the fight for new entrants into the mining sector so that more people can start their businesses within that sector. When we look at tourism, how do we deregulate it in such a way that more people can participate? And so when we talk about a new beginning, it's about, in fact, the fact that things as we've had them have not worked. The ANC has set up a system that benefits the elite at the expense of the poor. And what we've got to do is champion those who are left behind by finding systems that can do that. And one of the things that I've wanted to propose quite strongly is that we need a jobs and justice fund, a fund that can be established where people can contribute into it so that new entrants can find funding, they can find support, so that they can participate into the economy. Because often people are locked out because, A, they don't have the resources, and we need to assist in being able to get into that.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit now about some of the internal dynamics within the DA, and some of these are at the level of, as we've already touched on, reasonable and acceptable differences about what the character and orientation of the party should be. Some of it has to do with more specific job-related performance issues. In that regard, can we talk a little bit about Mayor Patricia de Lille? I mean, she's been great. She smiles. She talks wonderfully about things like everything related to housing, drugs, also in recent years, very strong on the water crisis in Cape Town. And she seems to be a lekker politician who knows her city. And then, hey, Bana, we suddenly get these claims. Yo, something is wrong. It seems as if there is some sort of dissonance between her behavior and some of her ethical and legal obligations, as the affidavit is stating. Now, you want to role model to this country what the ANC is not. Can we have more precise description of what is it that she has to answer to on the face of it?
Look, when I was confronted with the issue of the affidavit, etc., I asked the city to be able to set up an independent investigation, which I don't think the ANC has done. I've asked for the audit committee to look into all the processes. I'm not here to pronounce guilt on anybody, because those need to be tested and investigated. And I think one of the things I can be proud in the DA is that we hold public servants accountable regardless of what's happening. So now in this instance, we've got to ensure that the governance model upholds the principles of accountability and transparency. That's why we've asked for that to be investigated. And I'll certainly, as soon as I get that particular report, get on to...
But what is she alleged to have done wrong?
I think in the in the affidavit, the questions are asking about whether or not, and this is some things that I've challenged the mayor on, is that we must ensure that if there are allegations, they're investigated. There's certainly some challenges in some of the contracts that don't pertain to the mayor. They contain to some of the administrators who are in the city and how those should have been followed. And I think it's well within the right to be able to investigate. And I think Patricia and certainly the team in the city of Cape Town have committed themselves to ensuring that that investigation is done.
I don't know. I don't know what you just said. I want to know what. Here's my interest in it. I'll release my agenda to you.
Yes.
Many of us have had enough of Jacob Zuma's mafia state. But then we must know that you're going to be different. We don't want to replace Zuma with Emerson, Mnangagwa.
Yes.
So if you're going to be different, you should be able to tell me plainly. She is a public elected official. She's not merely a DA member. So in this particular instance, the normal sort of Wedemontage, no, this is a party matter type of response, cannot hold. She's the mayor of Cape Town. And I am none the wiser, even as a political animal and as a news hound. And even the affidavit is quite vague about this legal and ethical obligations, how she failed, due process being followed, placing pressure on the city manager. Can we just speak plainly about what it is that she allegedly did wrong? Because if you share that with the public, or the party does, that is not undermining her natural justice rights. We are merely stating something that is factually true, i.e. what is she alleged to have done?
The affidavit goes to this particular point. There were a number of contracts in the city that were adjudicated by the administration. The mayor is not involved with that. The city's services that investigate these issues raised flags, as is their obligation to do so. They said, look, in this instance, there could be undue influence driven by a particular senior member of the administration. They reported the matter to the mayor. The mayor then had to make a decision as to how the investigation goes through. There was a delay in that process, which is what I think the affidavit alleges. And therefore, as a party, we came in and said, no, there cannot be. There must, in fact, be a council meeting that is convened. That took 7 days. After that, the investigations must be put to the audit committee as to how those particular contracts were adjudicated and what the process was there in that instance. And once I've got a report from the audit committee, that's why it's not even a city, it's not a party investigation. It had to be given to the city and someone who is independent, because I have no interest in shielding anybody. And to make sure that the senior administrators in that, that's why it had to go to a council. The city manager, one of the directors in the portfolio of transport, needed to be held accountable. So that's where the allegation sits at the moment. And I didn't make the allegations. They came from that protected disclosure affidavit about whether there was undue interference in the adjudication of the tender. And I think it can be investigated.
So has it been, and where's that process at?
Council convened on Tuesday. So the audit committee will begin its job as of today. So I don't think we could say we've not acted in speed. It's happening as we speak.
Okay. Martin in Brixton, good morning. What is your question?
You see this. I'd like to know from Musima Omane, how sure are we he's the right person to lead this country out of the predicament when he himself is surrounded by corrupt officials?
What do you mean? Which corrupt officials? Evidence?
The MMC of Transport for Gauteng and the mayor for Gauteng. They had meetings for them. We are sitting without jobs today because of those two people. The mayor liked when he go on air and say he gave that friend of his job back because his friend pointed out corruption. We took documents to the mayor. We pointed out corruptions and we're sitting without a job. And they're not even investigating that corruption.
Okay, that's a very particular claim. I'm not sure if Musi can answer for that one, but I mean, answer the guy in general as you'd like to.
I think, look, if there are allegations of corruption, they always are investigated. Herman Mashaba has been at the forefront of fighting against corruption. It's the only city mayor that I know of that has already suspended more than 8 Section 57 executives. We're fighting corruption to the value of 16 billion rands in the city of Johannesburg, and that process has already been undertaken. Even when we found that anybody, even within the party itself, has been found to have done wrongdoing, we fired them. So I don't think that it is fair to suggest even by any matter of means that the party has a tolerance of corruption at any level. And I think, lastly speaking, if those allegations must be tabled, they must be tabled. And I can certainly, if the caller is willing to leave their details behind, I can follow up on that issue and make sure we get to the bottom of it. I certainly have no tolerance of the DA in, of, I have no tolerance of corruption in the DA by any matter of means. We run clean governments, and I think we're showing South Africans that it's possible, in fact, to run governments that are clean.
Okay, we're going to take a break here, but let me just ask one question here from Twitter before the Twitter crowd think that I'm ignoring them. Lots of questions on Twitter, but here's one that's popped up now about four or five times, and I'm not even being tagged on the picture, and I'm sure you've seen this. David says, what is Musi Maimane's comment regarding the recent Entrepreneur Awards in the Western Cape, wherein there was not one person of color? Does he think it's fair and take the country forward?
No, look, I think the businesses that are taking place in the Western Cape are diverse. I personally have wanted to make sure all the pictures that were taken at the events are publicized. I think people can also pick one and decide on a particular narrative. We run governments that, in fact, when you look at our BEE spend in the city of Cape Town, it's higher than most metros, because we attract businesses of South Africans, particularly those who are left behind.
Yeah, but you're changing the subject, Musi.
I'm not. That particular picture I'm saying is just one picture.
Musi, you are changing the subject.
I'm not at all. I'm that asking tweet, your question.
Musi. That tweet was not about business people in general. It's about this picture. Have a look there. There's no one in that picture here that looks like you or me. Who there looks like you or me? There's a lot of people there who look like your wife, but not like you. No, I'm being dead serious. So the gentleman's question wasn't about the composition of entrepreneurs in the Western Cape.
Are
they not good enough to be finalists and to be winners?
Not at all.
They're just good enough to fill the big overall numbers.
No.
So you did change the subject. I mean,
far from.
Address the question head on.
I'm saying that can't be the only picture that was taken at the event.
This comes from the Western Cape's account.
More awards that have taken place. And I wasn't at the award ceremony itself. That's why I'm making the point to say there were more entrepreneurs at the event who represent the cross-section of society.
So not all the winners and finalists are in this particular picture?
Correct.
What was the breakdown? Because I've seen people trolling you over the last week on this particular point. Did you go back and then ask the people?
I would not accept the fact that entrepreneurs can only be of a particular race. I'd never accept that. It's certainly not something that we strive for, and that's the point I'm trying to make, is that we inspire our governments to represent the diversity of South Africans and make sure the best entrepreneurs are rewarded. And so I think, to me, I would focus on the fact that that's the job that we do. We make sure that all our entrepreneurs, black and white.
You see, there's a sense in which the question is completely trivial. Because it's just one photo.
Correct.
But there's also a sense in which it is non-trivial, because it also, in a very important, subtle way, speaks to, yet again, something you and I have spoken about many times over the years off the record, which is how the DA deals with optics in South African politics. And you've got to do politics in the country that you live, not the one in which you wish you lived. Now, I mean, this reminds me of our own 702 debacle we had with the 702 walk, when we had a tweet that went awry. I mean, how do you tweet this from the Western Cape government, right?
I don't like the picture. I don't like it. As leader of the DA, I don't like it. It doesn't reflect who we are. But, you know, what I'm saying is there's more. It's not the South Africa I envision. The South Africa I envision is where a diversity of entrepreneurs come on board and are rewarded.
Were there black winners there?
I was not at the event myself, so I think that must be the Western Cape event.
You actually don't know, even though 4 minutes ago you said there were more people there.
No, there were.
But
there
were there black winners?
I don't have the list in front of me, I must be honest.
Okay, let's take a break there. We've got 10 minutes left, and I want to throw forward towards 2019, because there's a very real possibility, I'm sorry, ANC, to get your blood pressure up, that the ANC may well get less than 50%. And if that happens, we obviously need to ask whether we are in a position to potentially either have the DA govern the country on its own or in coalition governments, and whether there are lessons to be learned from the attempts to do so in many places around the country currently. So we're going to speak coalition government for a couple of minutes on the other side of this break.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
Okay, before we talk about coalition, there's one thing I wanted to ask. You know, I mean, when we talk about identity in this country, we often obviously speak a lot about race, but gender also matters quite a lot. Mm. I mean, I can't even believe I've just said that. Gender in some ways obviously matters more, just if you look at the numbers and how much more women are affected by misogyny than we as black people. You can play example table tennis between racism and misogyny. If I look at the ANC, at your various leadership conferences, Musi, it's very hard to find women. I mean, you have black people on Twitter trolling you because of those awards in Cape Town. But actually, it would be far easier to troll Musi if you just look at who gets elected, even into the provincial leadership structures of the DA. It is mostly men, both at national and at provincial. You have to go to the Eastern Cape. Maybe you find someone deputizing. It is extremely hard to find women in top leadership position. Why is that?
One, I think it's an unfair conclusion in some ways.
It's factually accurate.
Because in truth, without trying to... Because I think people look at this issue and they say, let us set quotas as to how many women must be elected. If I'm a true Democrat, what I've got to make sure is make sure there are no obstacles for women to get into leadership races. And to be fair, without quotas, the DA is the only party that has had a woman leader, has had women leaders play a prominent role, has had leaders, even in fact, when I look at our parliamentary caucus, you had on your show this morning people like Natasha Mazzoni, many other people who stand up as public reps, who stand as women and speak. Now, when you go towards provincial elections, you have to give Democrats the right to choose. Now, I'd like for more women to be there, and we certainly make it possible. But when I go to the Free State, it's possible that others might say, where are the men in the Free State? Because both the woman leader and the chair is a woman. So my job is to make sure that there are no obstacles that hinder or discriminate against any particular race, and work hard to make sure that the sisters in our party are given an opportunity to get to the top of whatever opportunity they so choose to do so. And when you look at our public reps, our councillors, in all the other various structures, there's a broad representation of women. Can the DA be led by a woman in any province? Of course it can.
But you agree that the optics of your provincial leadership structures are shocking?
They vary from province to province. And I'd want for
overall, they are shocking.
I want for more women to participate.
But overall, they are shocking. For a country that you take... I don't know why you're laughing. I mean, if you take gender politics seriously, you should agree. I don't know why you're dithering on the question.
I'm not dithering.
The optics, and I'm sure your staff will agree with me, especially the women behind you, the optics of women and their conspicuous absence in your leadership structures should appall anyone who is committed to intersectional justice as much as that picture with white winners of an entrepreneurship award. If it doesn't, then you are no ally of women.
I want more women in leadership structures, and I've worked
what are you
hard
doing about
to
it?
Eliminate all obstacles to leadership for women.
I wish we had two hours, because when you say eliminate all obstacles, this gets us back to the very first identity conversation about the nature of liberalism.
Yes,
there's negative freedom and there's positive freedom. Black people will never get ahead if the only way you address the legacy of white supremacy is to say there are no obstacles stopping you from applying for the job at 702. No. Yes, because positive freedom is more important. Do I actually have the building blocks? Does the criteria that will be applied when I enter speak to my particular history and the ways in which my gender, my race, other social traits have been implicitly shown bias against? So when you talk about removing obstacles, it shows to me that you have a very thin idea of what it means to reduce the gender gap. Allowing women to apply is not going to eliminate misogyny.
If you're a Democrat, which you are like me, you must accept the fact that when I put up lists, whether they're for councillors, whether for whatever, one of the principal things I put on the table is that those lists must be diverse, not only on as a function of gender, but as a function of race, age, all aspects. We work hard as part of our federal executive to ensure all our lists are diverse. And when I showed you the facts that statistically, all across, our public reps are diverse on the basis of gender.
I'm talking about very key positions,
Now, let's get into elected positions. In the Eastern Cape, for example, a woman stood for the position of leader. Should I interfere with the democratic process of the delegates in the Eastern Cape and say, you'll vote for her because she's a woman and therefore she must win? I want her to win. But democracy says, let the delegates who voted at the Congress vote for women.
I think that's poor form.
I think that's poor form.
I think that's prioritizing form over substance rather than showing an ability to creatively deal with the underlying gender biases, which when you prioritize process over substance will always mean that you and I with our male genitalia will have a bias in our favor because of the nature, the male-centric nature of politics the world over. I don't know why you're disagreeing with the point. It's not only a DA problem, it's a global problem. But can you recognize that you haven't dealt with the problem any more than the ANC has?
It is a global problem. But what I'm saying is it's not without lack of interventions. We're putting steps in place to address this very question. And I am certainly working actively to ensure that women in the DA have prominence, have a role, and in fact contribute to our discourse and ultimately lead in the DA.
Is that why so many men dominate your national structures?
from James, Ethel, Herman, Solly, I mean, all the people nationally, we have to struggle to find the women. But let's set that aside. There's a real possibility of the ANC getting its comeuppance sooner than it thinks that it would. It could happen in 2019, as you and I agree. And if that happens, there's a chance either of you getting over 50%, or alternatively, not getting over 50%, but being in a position to have a government of a coalition partners. What do you say to people who are skeptical about whether coalition government can be stable in terms of governance when they look at some of the fallouts that happen, for example, between UDM and the DA, the local level in PE? And I'll give you a minute just to reflect on that. I think we'll have to agree to talk coalition governments more fully on another occasion.
Look, I think we are modeling coalition governments. We're learning the hard lessons, but I think they're working. You know, to be honest with you, governments exist to pass budgets, to deliver services to the people. And the coalition governments in Joburg and Tshwane, even in PE itself, are showing the fact that they are delivering for citizens. And I think that's something we should welcome in South Africa. I think in 2019, that should be the model to go forward. You need that accountability. You need that system to be able to ensure that, in fact, no party can ever be able to, like the ANC, ignore the rest of us and dominate in the way that it is. So I'm really buoyed by the 2019 election. And I think coalitions are showing in the country that they're working.
Do you have a target for 2019 yet? Still 30?
No. Our target is to make sure that we govern in more places and ensure that the ANC doesn't get the outright majority that they want. And I think that's an important thing for all South Africans, because if we just keep the ANC, we'll end up with another ZANU-PF.
Musi, thank you for coming in and for the hard engagement. I do appreciate it. You owe me coffee still.
My great privilege. Thank you very much.
Cheers.